Thanks for checking out another cast from Teal Town, USA. Subscribe to our YouTube and SoundCloud channels or find us on iTunes for more Sharks content, including post-game, interviews, and our weekly wraps with the Pucknologist. In this one-on-one with Drew Remenda, we talk about the recent trades by the Edmonton Oilers, the December 29th game between the Sharks and Oilers, the comments made by Jim Lights about Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, the possibility of Patrick Marleau returning to San Jose in 2019, and more. Drew, welcome back to the show. Gotta ask you, I thought we were going to focus a bit on the Sharks, but after what happened today with Edmonton, is this the last desperate attempts of Chiarelli at this point, trying to make up for a lot of injuries?
Yes. He is obviously in a desperate situation because the way that the Oilers are right now. They went through two big winning streaks, and now they're going through two big losing streaks. The situation with Edmonton is they've lost Oscar Klefbom for a good portion of the time because of broken hand and blocking the shot. And his pinky is all screwed up, and he's not going to pull a Ronnie Lott and chop it off and go play. Chris Russell, groin injury, I think. And when you look at Andre Sekera, he is coming back off of another major surgery. After the Oilers made the playoffs, he had reconstructive surgery on his knee and missed a good portion of last season. And then the training this past summer, he tears his Achilles, so he's missed a good portion of this season. And he's an older gentleman. So they've got guys, as Ken Hitchcock has said, put in positions where they shouldn't be. So you've got guys playing up a level, and that never really works out for long term for any team. So Peter Chiarelli goes and gets a Edmonton kid and Alex Petrovic from Florida. I'm sure you can trade some. Chris Wideman they picked up, and then just kind of turned him after a few games played for the Oilers about a month ago. And then the interesting one today. So Drake Cugino, really well-liked kid, a little guy. He's injured every now and then, but he's a hustler and hits people, and he's had some success playing with Connor. He's a friend of Connor McDavid's. And everybody really likes Drake because he's an honest hockey player. Not very big. And Jason Garrison, who came to camp on a PTO, and he's getting up there in age, and I imagine we'll see Jason on the waiver wire pretty soon. Anyway, those two get traded to Chicago for Brandon Manning, and a kid that plays in Sweden, who probably the Oilers will never see. Now, you think, okay, the Oilers have picked up two veteran defensemen and guys that can shore up, you know, their top six. The interesting part for maybe people in San Jose who don't know, Brandon Manning was the guy who was involved in the collision with Connor McDavid his rookie year, which broke Connor McDavid's clavicle and put him out for a few months. And then when Connor McDavid came back and made his first appearance against Brandon Manning's old team, the Philadelphia Flyers, Brandon Manning said something like most guys they do, you know, keep it up, McDavid, or something like that, chirp each other, I'll break your freaking arm again. That kind of stuff escalated, and Connor really took it to heart, and Connor said, you know, it's the most classless thing I've ever heard a guy say. He's saying that he did it on purpose. And then when Brandon Manning came to Edmonton with the Philadelphia Flyers, he had to fight his way through the lineup, which I thought Brandon Manning really handled it well. Stood up and duked it out with Lucic, duked it out with Zach Cassian, and was pretty much picked on all night. And, you know, the hockey revenge factor. Now, Brandon Manning's, I'm sorry, I can only laugh about this. Brandon Manning is now going to have to walk into that dressing room tomorrow and go, hey, Connor, how's it going? Now, Peter Chiarelli's, the talk is that Peter Chiarelli had checked with Connor McDavid if he was cool with this. And Connor said, yeah, I'm fine with that. But it's still going to be an awkward, you would have to think it's going to be an awkward moment, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be the...
Oh, my goodness.
Until somebody goes at McDavid and Manning has to be the one who stands up for him.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm thinking that, yeah, you know, Connor's a classy kid, and Brandon Manning, he's a good kid, too. And I really thought a lot of Brandon Manning when he came in here and had to do what he did against a lot of opponents. So I'm sure the professionalism will take over, but man, oh, man. You can't write this stuff. You really can't. If you would have said to me, okay, who's the last guy that Peter Chiarelli is ever going to trade for? Brandon Manning would have made the top of my list. he's never going to bring in Brandon Manning because he broke that. And he really didn't. I mean, the collision is the collision, and it, you know, it was awkward. But honestly, he would have been number one. Brandon Manning will never play for the Edmonton Oilers as long as Connor McDavid is captain of the Edmonton Oilers. I'm wrong. Again, I'm wrong. So, yeah, good stuff here in Edmonton, man. Good stuff. Fun stuff.
Oh, man. Well, and so, again, since the last time we spoke, of course, the way things work out, we're talking about, well, I wonder if T-Mac is on the hot seat. And then the very next day, Hitchcock comes in. Now, I went through some numbers. I don't know that I have them perfectly right, but it seemed like it took Hitchcock, you know, a few games to get everybody, all the boys on the same page. And then there was a really nice run. It was like 8-1-1 or 8-2 or something. And then
something like that. Yeah, 8-2.
Yeah. And then now
2-1 or something like that.
And now a 5-game streak.
Lost 6-7.
Yeah, so obviously this kind of goes to address that. And still just only a point or two out of a playoff spot right now.
The interesting thing is, when you look at the numbers, and you know, there's the term in financial circles, they call it the dead cat bounce. When a stock is dropping, it rebounds for a little bit of a time, and then it goes back down again, even harder going down, declining than it did originally. They call that the dead cat bounce. And oftentimes, you do, with a new coach coming in, get a dead cat bounce. And the Oilers experienced that. The interesting thing was, the last 8 games of Todd McClellan's career as the Edmonton Oilers head coach, his goaltender save percentage was 870, I do believe it is. And I'm doing this off the top of my head, so I may be off a few percentage points. And the first 8 games of Kent Hitchcock's career as an Edmonton Oilers head coach, the goaltending percentage was 927, save percentage. You know as well as I do, you've got to be in the 918 to 920s to get up to be a winning goaltender. So he got goaltending. He got the change in goaltending, and it worked for a while. But he was playing Connor McDavid 28 games. Then Oscar Klefbom got hurt. Then Chris Russell got hurt. And now things are really difficult. The goals in this, to last night's game, when they were on this losing streak, the goals against had popped up to 4.5 goals against per game during that losing streak. They gave up 7 to the Sharks, so that's going to go up. You're not going to win hockey games if your goals against average is up in the 3s. You just don't. He's up in the 4s and probably be up in the 5s by tomorrow against Winnipeg. So Ken's trying to do what he can. He's figuring out what Todd McClellan has figured out, is that the Oilers don't have any depth. You want to watch a game and a team that's just, that was so different. If you watch the San Jose Sharks yesterday versus the Edmonton Oilers, San Jose Sharks have depth. When you've got Joe Thornton, Joe Pavelski, Tomas Hertl, Logan Couture, Donskoy, Sorensen, Meyer, Mel Karlsson, on and on and on, at the forward position alone, versus Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Basically, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
After that, there's a huge drop-off. Ken's trying to find, and Hitchcock is trying to find some sort of depth with the team, trying to create it when it's really not there. So the difference is that Ken is finding out, as I said, what Todd knows and what everybody knows, that the Oilers don't have depth like other good teams in the Pacific. You talked about the silver lining, which is very far from me. What, you know me, I don't pick silver linings very often. They are still within striking distance of a playoff spot, but there's other teams that are in those positions as well and in fighting for the same playoff spot. It's so that's why Peter Chiarelli made the trade today and tried to shore it up, at least defensively, because you're not going to go out and find the offensive guys.
You know, speaking of the goalies, are you surprised that Talbot remained in the entire game versus San Jose yesterday?
Not really. I thought, I didn't like the third goal, Logan's goal. I liked it as far as, you know, Joe and Logan teaming up, and Joe's timing and Logan's quick hands, you know, were very impressive. That was the one that I looked at and went, you should have had that one. Other than that, though, you have to credit the other team. You really do. You can't look at those goals and think to yourself, okay, Cam should have definitely had that one. There was traffic in front of him. The shots coming from the point, that's the one thing, my sons, Davis and Donovan, I talked to them after the game, and they're very astute when it comes to hockey, and And Donovan said, boy, they get shots through, don't they? I said, yes, they do. And I said, why? And he went, wristers. They don't waste time. They move. They find the shooting lane, especially Burns and Carlson. Boy, they get the pucks in. And there's a lot of traffic in them. The Sharks own the middle of the ice. So I don't blame Cam for a lot of the goals. He faced 40 shots, and I think the Sharks attempted 74, I think, was the final attempted shot range. There was a lot of pucks going in that with a lot of traffic and some skilled guys there. He didn't get much help defensively. So, again, you have to credit the other team when credit's there. I didn't think Cam sucked yesterday. And I thought he, like I said, besides that third one, I'll give him, I don't know if a passing grade, but I'll certainly understand if you keep him in for 60 minutes.
And conversely, there was a bit of chatter saying, you know, look, you can look at this game from a Sharks fan perspective and say, okay, 7-4, you know, that's quality win. However,
yeah,
it's still the idea of, well, Martin Jones still let in three goals in 8 minutes towards the end of this game. That's something,
yeah,
obviously.
And, well, that's the one thing we talked about last time, right? I mean, when I look at the San Jose Sharks, it's Martin Jones is my question mark. Although, with Martin Jones, you do, because of his short history in the NHL. He's not a veteran goalie, like a Marc-Andre Fleury, but still, he's got enough experience behind him that I believe he'll get it together. I think Johan Hedberg's a hell of a goalie coach. He's a very smart young man. I think he'll get it. The thing that I look at with Martin Jones, and it's garbage time. He wasn't very busy, and sometimes you get a little dopey or go to sleep a little bit. And Dreisaitl's goal was nice. You know, he just got Justin Braun on the panic crossover, and Connor's goal was exceptional. It was absolutely exceptional, but it was, you know, how many seconds was that? 5-6 seconds on that?
Well, yeah,
I can't remember. It wasn't very much. But if you're looking from a San Jose Sharks point of view, that would be my only concern about the Sharks is Martin Jones. And can he raise his game? His save percentage isn't where it needs to be right now. It needs to be up. And with a team like the San Jose Sharks who control the puck a lot, it should be up. So that, and with the defense core they have, it should be higher. So there's the one thing I would say, okay, if you're looking for an Achilles heel for the Sharks, I would say that. But they are good enough where they can outscore some mistakes.
And that first goal, though, should that have even been a goal? Because at first it was Ty Ratty, but then they went back and said,
explain it to me. I don't know. From our vantage point where I was broadcasting, I thought it was a goal right away because we're down lower near the fans, and my angle is right, looking right at it. Okay, like just to the left of Martin Jones, and it looked to me like the puck had crossed the goal line. So then they go upstairs to figure out whether the puck crossed the goal line or not. And we had the overhead, and it looked like the puck was on edge. And you didn't see all white, but I always thought it went in, it crossed the goal line before that. And so I kept saying, yeah, I think it's a goal, it's a goal, it's a goal. Then it's a goal. Then it comes back. Well, Connor scored it. And my producer on the air goes, when? I said, okay, remember when they were just before the whistle went, Connor scooped the puck from underneath Jones and slammed it in. And so my producer said, so then why did he look at it? I said, I don't know. And so my wife, the wonderful Michelle Romander, she sent me a text because right after, you know, that beautiful 3-on-1 scored by the Sharks 16 seconds after they decided to go with. And Michelle said, maybe if all the Oilers weren't still looking up at the big screen wondering who really scored that goal, and the Sharks wouldn't have been able to score on that 3-on-1. But I don't know why they were even looking at it. If it was Connor's goal who scooped it out from underneath Jones and slammed it in, then what the hell were they looking at, right? I don't know. I don't. That's a mystery to me. It was either way that was going to be a goal, so I don't know how it ends up where they had to look at it for so long.
Yeah, that was just super bizarre the way that was going. But I do thought it was funny. 16 seconds later, bam, Domskoy Deke Talbot. That was great.
Wow, was that good? Was that a nice goal or what?
That
treated a bad double pinch. I mean, the good pinch by Benning, but a terrible pinch by Kajula. Terrible double pinch. But the 3-on-1 was so well executed from the top to the right to the back to the top to the left to the right. Bang. It was so good. So you, that's another one. So you got to give the other team credit, tip their hat to them on how well that was executed.
Yeah, and you brought up the Couture goal earlier. I thought that was exquisite patience by Thornton and a great hockey play from Couture, who realized he was into Talbot too tight, got some separation, and boom. And very reminiscent of how the Sharks' power play used to roll with Jumbo behind the cage.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to be careful during Edmonton other broadcasts because I flash back to being Sharks broadcaster when Joe does that and Logan does that. You know, the two of my favorite Sharks by far. And as you described perfectly, the one thing, Connor was the guy beside, in the crease beside Logan. And Logan just creates a little separation there. And Joe Thornton reminds me of Tom Brady in the fact that he can throw it hard, he can throw it soft, he can put it up and over and put touch on it, or he can just drill it in. And that's what Joe is. Joe's ability to have timing with his passes and touch with his passes is second to none in the National Hockey League. I still believe that. I still believe he's the best passer in the game. He's the best passer we've seen since Wayne Gretzky. And his timing and touch are second to none. And Logan's hands, I mean, that's what happens when you work on your game. That's what happens when you dedicate yourself to your profession. That's why Logan's Logan.
And I like that that Jumbo seemed to have found some great chemistry with Marcus Sorensen.
That's why Joe's Joe. Joe makes people better. He makes teams better. Peter DeBoer said it yesterday because I was asking him about Joe before the game, and he had a great statement. He said, when you've got that guy in your room, it's pretty hard to be soft. And I thought that was a terrific statement and a compliment to Jumbo.
And then, of course, a funny note for us, because we take down our notes from the game and everything, and how Weidman gets caught for holding Pavelski at 9 minutes. Then 5 minutes later, he hits Timo Meier in the face, no call, but then 12 seconds later gets called for tripping. And then it's just funny to us that, oh, and look, he got traded the next day.
He got traded, yeah. I don't know. I thought Meier sold that though. I didn't think he got hit in the throat. Meier is selling it like he got hit in the throat. But I didn't think he got it. I think he got his hands up. I think he protected himself. But he tried to sell a call. What the hell? And then, like you said, he gets traded today. So he wasn't long in the Edmonton Oilers. But think about it today, okay? It is, with the wind chill today, I think it was like minus 26 in Edmonton with the wind chill today. He got on a plane to Florida. You think he's sad? Come on, Matt.
Might be okay with it.
Yeah. I do believe he didn't wear shorts to the airport, but other than that, who knows, maybe changed in the plane. So you got it. He'll be okay. He's what I'm saying. He's going to be fine.
Oh, man. Have you been able to watch any of Lukáš Radil? Do you think that his play might kind of shut the door to the Barracuda Sharks shuttle?
I haven't seen a lot of his games. I saw the last two. I liked him. I thought he was strong. I think he skates well. One thing about the Sharks that has been not surprising is not the right word. Pleasantly pleased, I guess it would be. This is kind of redundant, but pleasing to see is how quickly Doug was able to kind of flip the switch and make this a faster team. The Sharks. The big thing was what? They went very fast. They weren't very fast. They're going to be in trouble because they weren't very fast. And now look at Los Angeles and look at the Sharks. It's not even close, right?
Yeah.
Look at Chicago and look at the Sharks. It's not even close. The Sharks have, they're still not the fastest out there, but they are a faster team than they were 3 years ago. Even, I think, when they lost to Pittsburgh. Was that 3 years ago? 4 years ago?
Yeah, three years ago.
They're a faster team now. And sometimes when teams get up to that level, then they go to the finals and they lose, or even if they win, they can't maintain that speed because you're giving guys big contracts because you're rewarding them. So you got to hand it to Doug that he has been able to keep the contracts reasonably tight to the vest, where he's able to, you know, make the right payments to the right guys, but also be able to supplement that team with some players that can get up and down the ice. And he's got what the Sharks had lacked for a while, which was depth. You know, I've said that before, but depth is, that's key in these, especially in the 82-game season. And I think when you're looking at Neal, and you're looking at Sorensen, you look at Timo Meier, Michael Carlson, all those guys that he's been able to bring in and had to work their way into the organization and into the National Hockey League, you got to hand it to them that that team, what they're doing and how they're approaching things is working.
And you look at, you've seen Suomela, Gambrell, Charche for spots. Seems like trying to find Eric Fair part two.
Yeah.
But
by the way, Rourke Charche, big kid from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, West Side boy. He plays for his dad, Mark, is a coach at AAA Midget, and I worked with Mark and his uncle Dave in Saskatoon at their academy. Rourke's a great kid, and he's smart. He's not very big, but he's smart. He's a good hockey player. He's got good wheels. So you want to talk about a kid who works on his game? I've seen him in the summers, man. Yeah, this is I'm hoping the best for Rourke because I want to see him make it with the San Jose Sharks. He's a wonderful person from a really good family in Saskatoon.
You know, I have a question here. You would be a great one to ask because no one's come up with the answer yet.
Okay.
We saw the Sharks from the beginning of the season give Joakim Ryan the slot along with Burns because we all knew that Vlasic and Braun would be together. So obviously you slot Carlson with Dylan. So Ryan keeps his spot, doesn't work for, I mean, you know, it does what it does for a while, but obviously it hasn't been working as of late. They give Schimmick a spot when Erik Karlsson goes suspension for two games for his hit on Austin Wagner. You see Tim Heed slot in for a game and is the first one to score. I mean, it's a really nice way to slot that in. But the key question being, if Heed and Schimmick, it's the idea of, well, they're not good enough to play, but they're too good to put on the waiver. Like, it's rare that you see a team, you know, ride eight defensemen.
Right.
What would
you make a deal?
Yeah, what would you do?
you trade. Well, it depends. Here's the way I think a general manager looks at it. First of all, you got to put the value in there. Who's more valuable as far as to the long term fix of the organization? Not fix the right word, but that long term vision of the organization. Is it Joakim Ryan, or is it Heed or Simic? Which guy? So you look to say, okay, which guy can we afford to lose? Which guy can we look at losing and going, yeah, okay, it was going to happen. Which guy do you know you're going to lose? Which guy can you afford to lose? And which guy can you absolutely not give away for free? So that's how you break it down. And if you have to have one of those guys, where the one guy that you absolutely don't want to lose in your organization, he's the guy you're going to keep up. The other two guys, you're going to try to make a deal. So the one guy that you can, I don't want to lose him, but it's just inevitable that I'm going to lose him. There's where you try to make some sort of deal if you're Doug. And we all know Doug can make a deal.
One thing
that he is, and Doug has always said it, ever since I've known him as a GM, he has always said, my work isn't done until the trade deadline. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but he's always working till the trade deadline to see if he can add that. And the one thing he is usually able to do is add somebody at the trade deadline. And can you work into that deal where you're going to use that one defenseman? You say to yourself, okay, I don't want to lose him, but I'm going to anyway, but I'm not going to lose him for free. So that's, you know, I'm not going to give the guy away and let somebody else take him without me getting anything back on my asset. That makes sense?
Absolutely. And it's kind of the idea of, well, let's see how fast somebody, be it Heed or Ryan, is moved once that deadline passes. It's kind of, once you know where Erik Karlsson is at, then you can make a decision.
Yeah. I think you made a statement yesterday about where he's at.
Erik Karlsson? Yeah. Just a scotch?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he made... Suspend him again for two games.
You know? Exactly.
He was motivated yesterday.
Oh, going through the numbers, it's, you know, like over the last eight games, Couture has 8 points. Brent Burns has 8 points. Tomas Hertl has 7 points. Erik Karlsson has 10 points. And he didn't play in two of those games.
Two of those games, right. And yesterday he was the best player on the ice.
By far.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just unreal how... he took over that hockey game. It's fun to watch guys like that. I don't care which team they're playing for, which team I'm broadcasting for. It's just fun to watch guys like that when they're at the top of their game. And let's not forget, he went through a lot, personal aspect and also a physical aspect, professional aspect. That surgery he had on his ankle was big time surgery. They removed a lot of bone out of there. It took him a long time to get back to being the swashbuckling Erik Karlsson we know from the Ottawa Senators days. So when you looked at it yesterday, and my play-by-play partner Kevin Quinn and I after the game, we looked at each other and went, he might be back. And Kevin, yeah, probably. And he looked really, really good.
Yeah, and when you consider that the first 20 games, there was a lot of speculation is, you know, how long is it going to take for this to work itself out? I think it might have worked itself out.
Yeah, it certainly have. And he's so good. And I just like the guy because he's one of those guys who's got a smile on his face. When he talks to you, as far as media goes, he makes eye contact. He doesn't give you the pat and cliche answers. He is an honest kid. I really like him. And so when you see him do well, it's good. It's good for the NHL when your star players are performing at that level. It's great for the game. I want to watch Erik Karlsson play. When are the Sharks playing next? So it's got that kind of stuff.
The time is nigh.
Yes, it is. I think that's one thing. I was talking to Peter yesterday before the game. And, you know, I asked him, I said, Barry Trotz said this to me a while ago when he was talking about coaching the Washington Capitals. He said, the hardest thing to do with a really good team is get them to care about the regular season. And I said, did you find that with this team this year? And he said, yes. He said, it's an accurate statement. It is hard sometimes because you're a veteran group of guys and they know you don't have to step on the gas and try to win all 82. You try to win all 82, but you're going to have some stinkers, but you don't get so wrapped up in it that, you know, you're ready to, you know, go out and skate lines after you lose. So, he said, but the one thing that really helped them out was their early losing skid that they got on that road trip. And he said, and that kind of woke them up to like, hey, we can't be just floating around here. We got to get it in gear. He said, just before the Christmas break and, you know, they started to get it in gear. He said, you could sense in the room that they thought to themselves, hey, we've got some potential here. We got an ability to do something with this team. If everybody starts playing to their potential and everybody starts getting healthy at the right time, we're going to be okay. So he said that he thinks that they're starting to grasp that they could make some noise in the Western Conference if they continue to rise to their potential. So, I think he's accurate.
So what you're telling me is the team CEO just doesn't need to call him out in print.
Yeah, I don't pull a Jim Leitz. you would think that. If I'm a coach, I'm thinking to myself, oh, you're not helping. Let me coach. Players play, coaches coach, managers manage, and Mr. Leitz, just go take care of everything else. Don't add to our problems. You know, Pat Riley, the great Pat Riley, basketball coach extraordinaire, used to talk about peripheral opponents. And I always thought that was a great term. And peripheral opponents, he said, can be anybody in any walk of your life. If you're on a team, he said, peripheral opponents can be your family wanting tickets on game day. It can be the media talking to you about something else other than what you're you know, about to approach. It can be management when they're doing one thing and saying another thing. It can be all kinds of things. But peripheral opponents can derail a team. Jim Leitz, peripheral opponent. First of all, your top two players, you need them on your side. And it's not like the old days where you can say things about these young men nowadays and they're going to listen to you and take it to heart. They're not like I was growing up where we were told negative things in order to improve. You can't do that anymore, apparently. You can't tell somebody honestly what they are. You know, you can't say, remember, you're dumb and you don't know hockey very much and you talk too much, but you dress well. You can't do that. You have to say, you know, we want to talk to you about tone. You got to put your arm around people nowadays. So Jim Lake's doing that. He's not helping. And I would just think a guy that's been successful in his career as a sports administrator would realize that. But it was so contrived. I mean, he called the meeting with the media. I mean, it's not like he was in passing where he was going down an elevator and somebody asked him about what you think of Sagan and Ben tonight, and he said, whatever. Like after a game where you're mad. And this was all contrived and set up, and this is the best thing you came up with? Come on, man. The best two players, get them on your side and hope for the best. Or else, better than that, let your general manager and your coach handle it.
It's not like this is the first time in history that the, you know, top two players of a team are having a bad season. I mean, hello, Anže Kopitar.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. Hey, go ask Eric Carlson what it's like when the ownership calls you out. How did that go? It's just, listen, as an owner, you're putting all that money up, you get to say what you want to say. And certainly Jim Leitz is direct contact with Mr. Gilardi, the owner of the Stars. And Mr. Gilardi gave him the green light for this, then shame on him as well. You just don't do it. You just don't. You can handle it a better way. They may be effing horse bleep. Okay? They have not played as well this year as they had last year. Puck's not going to the net as much, but I still need him on my side. Bottom line is, when you look at what's the best thing that's going to happen if I say this? What's the very best thing that's going to happen? Do you think all of a sudden they're going to go, Ben and Sagan are going to go, oh, you've been playing bad? Oh, okay. Sorry. We'll get it together. Or are you going to seed the seeds of resentment?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I just don't understand the end game. I just, my brother Don, who's very successful, I don't know what he does, but he lives in a huge house in Vancouver, and he's got way more money than me, and he's dresses better than me, and he's much smarter than me, and he's very successful. I don't know. I have no idea what he does. But he always says the same thing to me when we're talking things out. He always goes, okay, what's the end game? A lot of times I don't have an answer for what the end game is. And that's for Mr. Leitz to look at that and went, okay, what am I going to accomplish on this? What's my end game? And the end game was, you're just pissing off your two best players. Yeah. Makes no sense to me.
Should have went like St. Louis and just adopted a puppy.
Yeah. Yes. You can't go wrong with a puppy. Cannot go wrong with a puppy.
Finally, there's been a little bit of talk about what is going to happen in Toronto. We know that Marner... There's some key pieces that need to be re-signed, and maybe Marleau is not part of the roadmap going forward for Toronto. Do you think that Marleau is in Toronto next season, or do you think he could possibly be wearing teal next season?
Well, that's a great question. I know he's really enjoyed Toronto. I know that Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews are so grateful that Patrick Marleau has been there their first couple of years in the National Hockey League. And we all know why Patrick, first of all, is an extremely fine gentleman with wonderful character. He went through what those two young players did, which was being young in the National Hockey League and getting mentorship. Patrick got it from Kelly Rudy and Mike Vernon. And he talks about Vincent D'Anthony and Tony Granato and all the veterans he is around and how they were so supportive of him, especially, you know, as a young player playing under Daryl Sutter. Not the easiest thing in the world to do. And he got a lot of support. He lived with the Rudys. And Mitch Marleau is part of the Marleau family. He's taken both Marleau Marner and Matthews under his wing. And they've been great to him and really helped them become the players that they've become. I would think that Patrick, because of his age, certainly would make... and his career would make the one thing that you have to look at is who can I get rid of in order to free up the salary that Marner and Matthews are going to require. Considering Connor McDavid makes 12.5, Leon Draisaitl 8.5, and you go around the league, how many guys are making that $9 million plus, and Marner's and Matthews' numbers are there. So, yeah, I think Patrick could be a guy that is moved. Although Mike Babcock is a huge fan of Patrick Marleau. Huge, huge fan. Has liked him ever since he was playing in San Jose and Mike was coaching in Detroit and Mike had him with the international teams, with the Canadian Olympic teams. He loves him. So So I'm not sure that I would just dial out of Patrick's area code just yet to go to San Jose, but I think that's the only other logical place he would come to. Like I said, he's enjoying Toronto. You can tell in the way that he's playing. But the only other place, the only natural place for him is to come back to San Jose. And wouldn't that be fun?
Of course. That would be a hero's welcome.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'd love to see it. Love to see it. But I'm not saying he's going to change his 613 area code just yet.
We'll have to get a betting pool. Who returns to San Jose sooner, Drew or Patrick Marleau?
I think we know who San Jose would like to return faster. I don't think his first name's Drew. But anyway.
Oh, I don't know about
Patrick's
that.
Patrick's a little bit more valuable. I am in San Jose, actually. I'll be in San Jose on the 11th of January because I'm going to do a Hockey Night Canada game, Ottawa and San Jose. So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, that's going to be outstanding. We will have.
And I just may stay. I may find a place in one of the offices and just stay.
Oh, there you go.
I'll just start broadcasting. I'll just show up for the next broadcast after that and see if anybody says anything.
Oh, yeah, I remember him. Yeah, come on in.
Yeah, see what they do.
Yeah, I will say it was, you know, I got the Sportsnet feed for yesterday and kind of ping-ponging between our local one, and it was just really fun to hear you call a Sharks game.
Thanks, buddy.
That was awesome.
I like doing it. It's a little bittersweet, but I still like doing it.
All right. Well, again, thanks for joining, and hopefully I can meet up with you at some point for the San Jose-Ottawa game.
You bet, AJ. Good talking to you, my friend.
You too. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Thanks for checking out another cast from Teal Town USA. Subscribe to our YouTube and SoundCloud channels or find us on iTunes for more Sharks content, including post-game, interviews, and our weekly wraps with the Pucknologist.